Grüezi miteinander, ich begrüße Sie ganz herzlich zu einer weiteren Ausgabe von Weltwoche Daily Spezial. Mein Name ist Roman Zeller und heute haben wir einen hochinteressanten Gast bei uns in der Sendung. Sein Name Nicola Califano, 50-jährig und er diente 28 Jahre lang in den Spezialeinheiten der italienischen Armee in Antiterroroperationen, Geiselbefreiungen, Verhandlungen mit bewaffneten Gruppen, darunter sogar die Taliban. 2019 wurde er im Irak selbst verwundet. Trotz einiger Verletzungen behandelte er und evakuierte er andere Soldaten. Davor wurde er mit der silbernen Medaille für militärische Tapferkeit ausgezeichnet. Er war auch in Verhandlungen, das ist hochinteressant, im Zusammenhang mit der Ukraine beteiligt. Mr. Nicola Califano, vielen herzlichen Dank, dass Sie sich die Zeit nehmen. And now we switch to English because it's easier probably for you to understand. Thank you very much for taking your time. First of all, I would like to ask you, as our audience might not be familiar with you as a person, who are you? What do we need to understand about you to understand you? The main aspects of your life?
Actually, I joined the army and I've always been fascinated by adventures. And as I told many times, my point of view, my focus in my life, I always put myself in condition to prove myself that I can do a little more, a little more. Growing in an environment for more almost 30 years. I joined the Special Operation Forces in 1995. After more than 2 year course, I went to operative site since 1997, and I've been working operative team until 2022-2023. Mm-hmm. Last 2-3 years, I was part of a Special Operation Helicopter Squadron, so I was training a helicopter crew. And all these years, of course, now I'm happy that I retired. I'm happy to live that life that I never had before, so my civilian life. I put myself in the center of my activities, put my family around me very close, because, of course, being 27, 28 years in special operation, I spent at least 6 to 8 months per year abroad. So that's the fact why I have 3 kids. I am my 3rd relation now. So it's my fault, but I would say the lifestyle I lived so far didn't help at all. And all the great thing is, if I become younger again, I will do everything again. The bad and the good things happen in my life. I have more than between 20 to 23 deployments abroad. So basically I spent half of my life living around the world and meeting people. And I have to say the great thing that people, being a special operation forces, you know, want to shoot, want to kill, but it's just a lifestyle you have with your friends. We hate war. We hate war because every time we have an operation, something, always there, the possibility that you're never going to come back. So it's extremely stressful. What we do to work side by side with those brothers that actually enjoy the same life of you. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I always say, don't think about somebody that done my job. I really hate war. We spoke about with Filippo and other people a lot about war. And I always say last person that would like to go on war is a soldier or a special operations soldier. Mm-hmm. The only thing is we are really good, extremely deep sense of responsibility, sense of duty, and especially we are really respectful for everybody around us. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing.
Tell us a little bit more about your almost 30 years in the Italian military forces. Which unit did you serve? Where were you deployed? And maybe also, what were your responsibilities?
I've been serving in a 9th regiment called Moschine. Actually, it's a unit that belong actually and is belong from the 9th regiment Arditi from the First World War. Is one of the eldest unit in the world about special operation. And I've been deployed everywhere. I've been in Bosnia in the beginning, Kosovo, Iraq, Africa, Afghanistan. I've been 2 years in the United States studying special operation medicine. So I've become a paramedic and a combat operation special force medic. And I was in Germany for 3 years in Pfullendorf, in International Special Training Center, as an instructor. And I was teaching planning, so MDMP, and shooting, counter-terrorism shooting, and medicine, special operation medicine. And I became as a member, as a young member of the team, so as a weapon guy, and I specialize in special operation medicine. Since 2005, I've been a medic in a special operation team. So, good thing, bad thing, and everybody loves you when you go on operation, and but you are the medic, so you can help everybody. And the secret is I spend most of my time training my team to become really effective also in first aid. And I always joke with them. They say that, oh, so we can help one each other. I say, no, because if something happened to me, I have to be sure that I'm the medic, somebody else can help me as well. So, and in the end, my last part of my career, the last 5-6 years, I was a team leader. A company NCO. So I went from, I passed all the steps. So I went from executing order to planning and give order for execution mission. And that's actually give you a lot of perspective how to see. That's the good idea from Filippo, was just to use this and tell companies how to see tasks from different perspectives. From the perspective who's given the task, and from the perspective who execute the task. And the idea was just to translate all this my past from military planning and operation execution in civilian. And if I always say, if I could bring 11 men follow me in a really dangerous operations where we have really high risk to die or get wounded, I'm sure I can use the same methodology in a civilian life and tell companies how to actually have a good relation between executor and planners and how to see one each other in different eyes, not only the, okay, my boss, the guy that they have to work, but be part in the same team. I, well, one thing that we always say, and that's we use back in a special operation, a leader is not a leader, but it's a team leader. So it's part of the team and lead the team. Because in English, leading means being ahead of the team and give it be an example for the team as well. Mm-hmm. So this is much what happened in my life. I've been married. I have 3 kids. One is 25, one is 9, and one is 6. So I wide spectrum ages. And I love my kids, and I have to say I'm enjoying now my retirement with my kids. And but I as I said before, if I can go back in time, I would do exactly the same thing, because everything made me, the experience that made me the man I'm now, and give me a lot of point of views.
You also served in Afghanistan and dealt with and negotiated with the Taliban and other armed forces. What was the purpose of that? And what did you learn about these people you were negotiating with?
Oh, first of all, one of the things I say, I learned that, like I said before, see things from this perspective. And I always say it sounds strange, but I've been dealing with Taliban But me and my team, we always respect them. I always put myself in their side, and I always understood from their point of view, they were right. And it's not something that actually you think a lot about. And respect between fighters always been something that I always try to transmit to my, to tell to my guys that they need to have, because we see things and right, there is in war, nobody's right, nobody's wrong. And they are different perspectives in any kind of war. Yeah, otherwise, it doesn't make sense why soldiers keep fighting, because no all soldiers are bad or no soldiers are good. So it depends how they show you the perspective. And why I say I show you, because we always say that war are decided by the old and for a fight by the young. And the difference is who's going to give you the right reason to fight for. If we see from two different perspectives and we analyze and we put ourselves in somebody else's shoes, we always see that we are all right. And at the same time, we are all wrong. So, and dealing, I have to say, one big surprise was that the beginning, I was young. I've been in Afghanistan 9 times. So I had 9 different tours in Afghanistan. And one of the last one, when we were in, we were closing the mission. I was in Kabul in 2022 when we were taking our national or Afghans national Italians from the country, because the Taliban were taking back Kabul. And I spoke with a general, Italian general was there, and I said, think about the first time I came here, it was February 2002. And now we are in August 2022. I'm opened and closed the mission in Afghanistan. I was there 20 years ago with a purpose, and I'm living now after 20 years and seeing that all the human lives, all the soldier lives that have been ended in this country didn't change anything. Basically, we arrived 20 years ago, and when we left, everything was exactly the same. So it was quite, was a bad feeling. Because we gave up the idea to the youngest, and I saw the 20 years young people, girls, especially girls, we gave them the hope that things could change in the country, and we abandoned them with their hopes and everything. That was the saddest part on the mission in Afghanistan.
Meine Damen und Herren, bitte verzeihen Sie diesen überfallartigen Unterbruch. Ich werde das Mikrofon selbstverständlich dem Moderator gleich wieder zurückgeben. Doch vorher habe ich noch eine ganz wichtige Durchsage. Abonnieren Sie die Weltwoche. Gegensteuer, die andere Sicht, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt, seit über 90 Jahren. Jedes Abo eine Liebeserklärung an die Meinungsvielfalt. Alle Angaben und Informationen finden Sie unter diesem Video. Vielen herzlichen Dank.
Did, when you were speaking face to face to the Taliban, did that change your understanding of the war or not?
Yeah, of
and
course.
How?
Yes, of course it changes, because I always say I'm a big fan of being human being and morality. And I understand sometimes that most of the time the problem with the wars are religions and beliefs and all these things. But if we are lucky to grow up in a Western country where we go to school, it, pretty much we have our own ideas. We grow up with our own ideas. We build our ideas, our political and social soul. They are not. Think about growing now in a madras, in an Islamic school, where they teach you, you can read only one book. It's been interpreted exactly how they tell you has to be interpreted. Do you really can build your own soul beliefs, or you will trust everything be told you? So it's never fighter's fault. It's who organize the life of the fighters and the people for. And yes, I arrested Taliban as well. And I have to say, I always treated them really well. Also, when they were wounded, I treat them as well as my guys. And I mean, the hostility ended when they were not a threat for me or for my guys anymore. Basically, everything was just executing orders and try. And I'm happy to say that most of the time, everything ended without shooting. I mean, they've been arrested. All my way to plan was just to get there, arrest them, and nobody get hurt. Us, all of them. So that was my main goal. Yeah, but yes, it changed my way to see war and everything. And now I'm a big fan and say, it's easy to tell people, fight the war because you're right, and we are from our side. Really, if I invite somebody sometime to put themselves in the fighter's shoes, and sometimes when I see video about Ukrainian or Russian soldiers on the front line, I can interpret those eyes and those afraid that they are afraid, they are scared, and I know exactly what's going on in their heads, and that's not easy. And I always say, war starts sooner or later to finish, because a single life wasted is a big loss.
Mm-hmm. When you think about those operations that you were involved, where it was a matter of live or die, which operation put the greatest responsibility on you personally? Can you think of any?
Of course, I cannot mention operation where. I can speak about, yes, yes, one of the last operation when I was one of the eldest, the planners, and one of the executors of the mission. We had we call an accident, but we blew up on a minefield. So around me, I had three guys lost one leg, and we had a couple of really bad injuries, internal hemorrhages, and everything. But the good thing was that we put on the field a lot of contingencies because we knew what the risks were, and all of them survived. That was a big, big goal, a big good things that we done. And I have to say, to be an executor or be a planner is not a lot of the same thing. An executor executes, a planner, you will feel the responsibility in everything. It's like be a father in a family. Everything happens to your kids, you feel responsible for what I could do not to happen, or why we did go over there. By the end of the day, we all know our risks, and we do what we do knowing that something could happen. So it's really easy to go over it. And it's not really easy. I mean, you have to work on it, probably some therapy as well. But you go over it because you know that each one of them knows exactly what he's doing and what he's risking.
I just wanted to re-ask, is there still an operation that returns on you still today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's few of them. There is operations that actually went right or wrong, and there is scenes. I call it ghosts. Sometimes it could be a smell, a noise, or a scene on TV that you don't realize, but you have this flashback of these ghosts coming back in your life, or people that actually died. As a medic, I saved a lot of life, but I saw a lot of people dying. So it's not only one. But it is small, because what we teach with Flip as well is that we have to confront our life face by face. So they always in each single mission, there is a single face. And in one mission, one face could be more dangerous than the other. And yes, there is small pieces of everything actually get together sometime. It depends where you are, what you smell, what you see, what you actually feel, there is one scene or other coming back in your head.
Is there, like, stupid question, is there a smell of death? Can you describe that?
Yes. Especially when you... okay, it's not what you think is organic. It's a mixture of blood, sweat, fear, and bar meat. And there is the smell of death. And there is few odors that actually I don't know why, but sometimes there's a smell that actually switch your brain faster than a scene. It's amazing how the smell actually can remind you and switch a thought in your head faster than everything you can see or you can imagine. Mm-hmm. It's death as a smell.
What is more horrific? Is it the smell or the quietness of death?
It's the steps. When you see somebody die, it doesn't matter what side. You have the first side is anxious, shock, and when you see before then the medic, the patient know when he's dying. You can see this resignation, looking you in the eyes, looking for comfort. Sometimes I squeeze the hand where Iraqi soldiers, and it was a medic. They were dying by themselves, and I was there, squeezed their hands, touched their shoulders, and I saw that a small gesture helped them to help. No, I don't want to say with a smile, but much quieter.
How do you personally, like, it's a very simple or stupid question, if you don't need to answer if you don't want, but how do you personally think about death?
Yeah, I don't think about it. When it happened, I see it as a natural passage through, and I will try, when it happened, to also people are really close to me, and I see them. The only difference is it depends. If you die doing what you like to do, is one thing. Mm-hmm. Dying, knowing that actually nobody is beside you, is the opposite side. And one thing that made me be awake the night before the operations and everything, I think about something happened to me and I didn't have close my kids or the person that I loved at the moment, or my family, my mom and my dad. And that was actually something like said, okay, in that moment. But the other side said, yeah, but if I had to die, at least I die doing what I love to do.
Mm-hmm. You earlier mentioned that you were negotiating also in the Ukraine war on behalf of Italy. What exactly was your role within this conflict? When did this negotiation take place? What was your responsibility within this all?
I really cannot go so much in details, but let's say that actually we were trying to understand what's going on, actually, especially in the beginning when we saw the Russian forces arrive almost to Kiev and retreat and just went back over a little bit more. So everything in the beginning was extremely confusing. And actually my job was with other eldest, let's say, or experienced, sound better, experienced people from other countries, try to really understand what different course of actions could Russian do, try to guess the best assumption, and try to figure out what could be the best solution to help the Ukrainian to fight their war.
Mm-hmm.
Were you talking to Ukrainian officials, private companies, soldiers, generals? Who were your counterparts in that mission?
Basically, we were organizing everything between NATO countries. And no, I didn't speak directly to Ukrainian. Everything was between NATO countries, officers, generals, and people that with a lot of years of service.
Mm-hmm.
Was not direct contact with them. At the moment, we speak about the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, and are you permitted to say something about the mission, the strategy, the outcomes, the plans also, or is that not allowed for you to speak up to?
At the moment, I don't think, yeah, no, I'm retired, but I have to respect a lot of restrictions as well.
And when it comes to the role of Italy within this conflict, what was the goal, the role also? What was Italy trying to achieve within this war, and how close did you come to this achievement?
Do you think that if you ask the same question in all different prime ministers been in Italy, they really know? I love politics, and I always be following. I never expose myself to politics, but I like to discuss and investigate what could be. I have to say the international politics right now is extremely confusing. I mean, we have different events, and we have a lot of countries that look like flags in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
So basically where the wind is blowing, the flag is going. And I don't think that nobody has exactly a strategy. We are giving them money, weapons, and everything, and tell them to fight without realizing that young soldiers are dying and old soldiers are dying from one side to the other. And is, in my point of view, is really hypocritical. Tell somebody to go fight, give them the boxing gloves and wait outside and tell them exactly what to do. And when they finish and say, oh yeah, you've been really bad, you have to fight harder.
Mm.
And I think war always starts sooner or later there to end. And who dictates where to end, who's gained more territory or more ground? I admit, that's my point of view. Of course, I don't speak about any idea from my country, but there is a moment when everybody has to sit at the table and say, okay, this is the end. What do you want? What do you want? Let's end fighting. I mean, look at the First World War, Second World War. We speak about World War. At the end of the day, sooner or later, somebody has to declare that they lost or they won. We can make everybody win. We know where we're always going to end. That everybody won their war. But yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think it. Unfortunately, in Europe or America or everything, there is a strategy how to end the war. There is too many aspects and economic aspect behind it that is not easy to reach the end of the war.
Das vollständige Video finden Sie jetzt auf weltwoche.ch und weltwoche.de. Den Link dazu finden Sie in der Beschreibung.